Hey, good morning. Happy Friday. Let's see. So the thought for today was to continue with integrals, and in particular to try to figure out a few more integrals. And the most of what we'll be doing today is finding ways to find integrals of integrable functions. Although what we'll be doing then next week is adding functions that we didn't previously consider integrable, and trying to find nonetheless a concept of integration that extends a little bit more, a little bit like the idea of weak derivatives. We can sort of extend the concept of integration to improper integrals, so we can get a few more integrals that way. Okay, but let's start with using the convergence properties of our integrals to be able to get more facts about them, just like we did with derivatives, where we took sequences and were then able to figure out more facts. Okay, so let's see. I believe last time I had stated here the definition of being an L1 Cauchy sequence of functions, and also an L1 convergent sequence of functions. So it converges in L1 to a function if for every epsilon you can get within epsilon in L1. And similarly, it's L1 Cauchy if whenever you take two functions from your sequence that have large index, they're within epsilon. So it's the same concept as we had for the other norms. It's just that now we're considering L1 instead of the supernorm. Okay, and the assertion that I made right at the end of last time, which I'll now prove, is that if we have a sequence that is convergent in this sense, then in fact the integrals converge, and that's going to enable us to compute some integrals by choosing a sequence of functions that converges to it and then computing that way. All right, but so let me just finish the proof here. So proof of the note. Okay, so just reading through the note here, it says that if I have an L1 convergent sequence, then something. So let's just write down first of all what this tells us, and then see what we get out of that. So no, if I have an L1 convergent sequence, and let's say we're in the Riemann integral functions on the interval from A to B. Okay, so that's the space in which we're doing this L1 convergence. So this is the setting that we're in here. Then what does that tell us? That says, well, since it's convergent, let's see, and that says, let's see, I guess I wrote it right up here, that for all epsilon greater than zero, we have this property. So let me just write that out. So for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists a capital N. Whenever I take a little n to be bigger than or equal to that capital N, then we have the restriction, the fact that the L1, the norm of the difference between Fn and F is small. Okay, and the definition is that it's less than epsilon. I actually want, and so I can put any epsilon there. I'm going to put, instead of epsilon, I'm going to put the epsilon over B minus A, because that's what's going to be handy for my proof. But the assertion is that for every epsilon, this is true. And so I can choose that epsilon. Okay. All right. And hence. All right. And so now I just want to compute this limit over here and see if I get that. And what I'm going to do is just compute the limit of the difference. Okay, so let me just do that. So integral from A to B of f of t dt minus this right-hand side, the limit as n goes to infinity of integral from A to B of f of n, f sub n of t dt. Is that's the thing I want to go to zero, and we just compute it. So this is equal to, well, let's see. So this one is a constant, right? And so I can bring it inside my limit, and then my interval is linear, so I can bring that inside also. So this is going to be the limit as n goes to infinity of the integral from a to b of f of t minus f sub n of t dt, right, using the those two steps. Okay. Let me stick an absolute value in that as well. Okay, so I'm going to take absolute value of both sides. Still true. All right. And now I can bring that inside. And so this will be a less than equal to when it does n goes to infinity of the integral of the absolute values. Right. It only gets bigger if I take the absolute value inside. And that is, in fact, the definition. So this is equal to the L1 norm. Okay, and we assumed that that was going to zero, so we're done. So we can compute the integral using this sequence over here. If these fn's are easier to deal with, like with power series or some of these other series, so these fn's might be easier to deal with. Okay, any questions about that? Okay, that's still a little bit abstract. So what we'd like to find now is a supply of sequences that converge in L1. So we can use this trick. Okay, and so that we get from the fact that sequences that converge in uniform norm, so uniformly, also converge in L1. So that's the fact that we observed from earlier. But let me just restate it and recall the proof. So theorem. Let's see. I guess this is 12.17. It says that if we have a uniformly convergent sequence, to this f in AB, then it's also L1 convergent. Okay, and we already found a bunch of sequences that we knew were uniformly convergent. The power series gave us some, the Weierstrass function was an example. We had a bunch of things that were uniformly convergent, and this shows that all of those are also L1 convergent, so we can now use them to compute integrals. So that's the structure of the argument. I mean, sorry, that's why we want it, that's the use. Let me now just run through the proof and then do some examples. So, proof. Okay, so you know, I realize that I never used this fact up here today. Sorry, I was thinking ahead. That's a useful fact for the next proof. I never actually used it for the previous proof. It's true, but it was not something that, that got used. So that's what I'm going to use now. Okay. All right. So let me rewrite it. So it did not get used. I didn't need that there. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, but now I do, and so I will use it, so it's a good thing to remember. So we're going to assume that our sequence converges uniformly, so I'm going to give this same sort of statement. So it converges uniformly, that means that for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists a capital N. For all little n bigger than or equal to capital N, we have, okay, now uniform, so that means that, the soup norm of Fn minus F is less than, and here I'm going to use the epsilon over b minus a. I can put any epsilon there, just as we argued moments ago, and the one I'm going to choose is epsilon over b minus a. Okay, all right, and hence, all right. So now what I'm trying to do is prove this almost the same thing, except I want to put an L1 there, right? So instead of the soup, I would want to sit an L1 there, and then I'll be done. Okay, so let me just start doing that. So for all epsilon greater than zero, we have capital N. For all little n bigger than or equal to capital N, we have. Okay, and so now I'm just going to compute. So I'm going to have this L1 norm of Fn minus F. Okay, so by definition, that's just the integral from A to B of the absolute value of Fn of x minus F of x dx. Okay, this we can bound. So this is less than equal to, well, I can just take a really, really coarse bound, right? So I have my function up here, and I'm just going to take a to be my whole interval and just take that whole box. Okay, so that's certainly bigger than I need, and so that'll suffice. So this is less than or equal to, and we had a name for that, so that's the upper bound associated to F with the trivial partition. It just has the two points at the ends, A and B, okay? So that's exactly what I just finished, drawing here. I just take one box, and that's what I did. Okay, and then I can just write out exactly what that is. So that's equal to the width, which is B minus A, times the height, which is the soup over X in AB of my function F of x, and that is equal to the soup norm. Okay, so b minus a times the my function changed names, right, which it should not have. So let me put back the correct name for my function. I have written here f when this is supposed to be fn minus f. So that was a mistake, and so let me just correct that. So okay, because that's the function that I was computing there, and similarly here, this will be fn minus f down here. All right, so that's then the soup norm. So b minus a times the soup norm of fn minus f. And that's exactly what we have a bound on. The soup norm here is less than epsilon over b minus a, so then we are done. So this is less than epsilon. And we have exactly what we need to have a convergence. We have for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists this n. For all little n, we have the L1 norm is less than epsilon. So that's okay. Okay, so that's the kind of technical end of things. I want to illustrate how this is useful. All right, so let's find some examples of L1 convergent sequences. Actually, maybe I'll just draw a little schematic of where we are just in the whole course of convergences, just to see how they fit together before I do that. So I'll put it over here. So what we already did with convergence is we had the main one was a uniform convergence. And we just finished proving seconds ago that this implies L1 convergence. Okay, and actually, does anyone remember any other convergences that we already have studied? So we've studied several.
Pointwise?
Sorry, yes, exactly. Yes, that's right, pointwise. And that one was also implied by uniform, right? So when we have uniform convergence, we also have pointwise convergence. And that was those are the three most common. And then we had one of them we just mentioned, we had also this notion of a C1 convergence, which was even stronger here, where the function and its derivatives converge uniformly. So that was another useful property that we had. Okay, so these are the convergences that we've studied so far. This is the new part right here. Okay, and these two things did not imply each other, okay? And so it's a little bit complicated to sort of understand the relationship between those, but this one does, and this is very useful because we had a bunch of things that converge uniformly, okay? So that's what we're going to make use of. Actually, let me start. The definition of the integral gives us some L1 convergent sequences. So let me just start with those, because they're there, and then move on to some of them that come from the theorem that I have above. So examples. All right, so if I have a Riemann integrable function, so f is a Riemann integrable on AB, right? We had a sequence of partitions that approximate it well. So that was that was the definition. There are Pn partitions of AB. Right, so we have our function here, and we have from A to B, and we can partition it up so that we get the good approximation, both from above and from below. Let me just write one of them, but there, you know, we have both. The integral from A to B of f equal to, we had a name for it, which was uf, but it was also equal to the limit as n goes to infinity of the uf pn. So what I want to do now is take a function that gives us this pn. So I'm going to take a piecewise, small picture, sorry, but if I build the piecewise function that's above my function f, that'll be an approximant in L1. So let me just write that down. I hope that will make it clearer. So if we have just any old partition, I'm going to write f sub pl. Let's say PU, simply the upper approximant involving P. Okay, so U is for upper, P is my partition P of X. And I'm just going to take the function, which is piecewise defined. Okay, so it's just going to be the sup over X in the interval from XI minus 1 to XI that comes from my partition of F of X. So exactly the height of that box. Okay, so that's all that's going to be, if we have x inside of that interval. Okay, so we're just going to have it a piecewise function. Let me make one more attempt to draw this thing. So it's going to be a constant here, and then it's going to be some other constant here, and then some other constant there. So it's going to be a sequence of boxes of different heights. Okay, so that's going to be my function f sub p u. Okay, and the black one is my function f. So it's this thing's a little bigger. And so things to note are f sub PU of X is bigger than or equal to F, because that's how it was defined, right? It's bigger, a bunch of boxes that are bigger. And if I compute the integral of from a to b of this f sub p u of x. Okay, so is it clear what that is? So that's mostly tracking through all these notations, other notation. But if I have this, I'm integrating now this function, which is built from boxes. Okay, so it's just going to be the sum of those boxes, and there's one box for each interval, and they're the high ones. Let me just write the answer and see if that's clear, and if not, you can ask. So I claim that that's exactly the same as just taking the u of f with that partition p. That's just the definition of the u with f with the partition p, because I just have that sequence of boxes, and I take their width, and then I take the height of the box is exactly the value here of this function f l of p u. Okay. Yeah, feel free to ask if it's not clear. There's a lot of notation to track through, but that's all it is notation. Okay. Okay. So we get I can just compute norm of f p u minus f, and this will be the L1 norm. And this is something now that is going to be just, so this is the integral from a to b, that's the definition of absolute value of f p u of x minus f of x, okay, dx. And we just observed here that FPU was defined to be bigger than or equal to F. So the absolute value is not needed. It's automatically positive. So this is then equal to the integral from A to B with just parentheses instead of absolute values. Okay, and but it's linear, so I can put that all. So that's just the integral from A to B of FPU. Okay, and those are just the integral. So this is then equal to, well, I just computed the integral up above. So that's u of f with p. And this one is, of course, the integral. So that's u of f. Okay, so this is the difference between the u of p and the u. And that's what we know is going to zero from up above. Right, so we can find a sequence here where those are going to zero. So if so if I use the sequence of p sub n above, I get that this sequence of functions f p sub n upper converges in L1 to f. So it's one way to think about, it's a class of functions that we know that converge in L1. And that the way to think about it is that the area between these two things is getting small. And that's what L1 is measuring, is the area between the two things. Right? So I take the difference and I take the area, which is the integral. So that's what it's measuring, and that's what's happening, is it getting small. So that's a good picture to have in your mind for a canonical class of functions that are at L1 convergent. Okay, any questions about that example? All right. So let's see, let me just give a few very explicit examples, because it's good to have some of those on hand, and then do some using this implication here, and go back to some powerful ones that we worked out where we had uniform convergence, and we can use that to get some integrals. But first, let me just do some more examples just to keep in mind. And so I guess this one is approximately 12.22 in the text. And there are two versions of it. So A and B. So I'm going to take a sequence of functions f sub n of x. And this is going to be either 1 or 0. All right. And it's going to be One, if x is less than 1 over n and a 0 otherwise. And these will be boundary functions from 0 to 1. Okay, so that's what I want to think about them. And B, I'm going to look at, say, g span of x, and this will be 1 or 0, and it'll be 1 if x is between 1 over n. I'm only going to change it at one point. I'm just going to change it at 0. Okay, so I'm going to make it 0 at 0. Okay, so this one could be greater than or equal to 0, and the bottom one has to be strictly greater. So I'm just changing it at one point. So if I graph the two things, so f sub n, looks like this, and g sub n looks like this. Okay, so that's the only difference. I change it at 0. All right, and now what I want to look at are pointwise and uniform and L1 convergence. And so again, it's going to be these three we're going to look at. So pointwise, uniform, and L1. Okay, so let's see. So for any of those three, can anyone see whether they converge and to what they converge? And so again, they're going to be the two classes. They're going to be these FNs and the GNs. So I have this little table. Makes sense. Let me decorate a little more. So this goes from 0 to 1. This is 1 over n, and this is similar 0 to 1. 1 over n is where it makes its jump.
GFN would definitely be pointwise convergent, right?
Yes, it would. And to
also
what?
Also uniform convergent, right?
It's actually not uniform, but it is pointwise. And what is it pointwise convergent to?
0.
Correct. Okay, does everyone see that? So G is pointwise convergent to 0. So yes, it converges to the 0 function. Okay, because at every point, eventually this goes past, and then I just get 0. Okay, and the only funny point is 0, and that one we made be 0. Okay, so that one was already 0. It stayed 0. Okay, actually, so let's look at pointwise convergence then for F, and then come back to the other types of convergence for G. So is F also pointwise convergent, but just a different function?
F would be pointwise convergent, but instead of being being pointwise convergent to the 0 function, it would be pointwise convergent to 1 at x equals 0 and then 0 everywhere else.
Exactly, that's exactly right. So it's pointwise convergent to this jump function. It's just 1 at 0 and 0 everywhere else. So characteristic function of 0.0. That's right. So this is also a pointwise convergent, not uniformly, to the function that's 1 if x equals 0 and 0 otherwise. Okay. So that's what that one converges to. Okay, now we can go to a uniform. Do these two sequences converge uniformly to this point, to this function, to their target functions, this one and this one respectively? So remember what that would mean. That would mean that the uniform norm of the difference would be going to 0. Right, so the maximum difference that I get.
So Fn would not be uniform convergent, but Gn would be uniform convergent?
So actually neither one is.
I forgot you said that earlier.
Yeah, neither one is. And the reason is that if I look at the difference between this one, even though it's 0 at 0, in between, there's some points where it's one. So the biggest difference that I get, which is the supremum norm, the supernorm between those, the any of my GNs and the zero function is always one. So let me just write that down here. So if I write down the supernorm between Fn, let me do G because it's easier to write. Between the Gn and the zero function, that's always one, because that's this, the largest value that my function takes, and it always takes the value one somewhere, right? That's always one. And that's not approaching zero, which it would have to do for that to be uniformly convergent. Okay. So this is not uniformly convergent. And similarly, this one is not uniformly convergent. Okay. But now what about L1? So L1, that would mean that we take not the supernorm here, but the one norm. And what is that one norm here?
I think for G of N, it's just the integral from A to B of G of N.
Mm-hmm. Could, that's right. Right. And what is that integral? So the height's one.
Is that one?
Well, how wide is it?
Hard one to over N.
Right.
Right. And then as N goes to infinity, it would go to zero.
It will go to zero, that's right. And we can even write it down explicitly. At n, that's just 1 times 1 over n, which, as you say, goes to zero, which is the important point, right? Okay, so that's exactly right. So I bet I can just write it down. So this is exactly 1 over n times 1, which, as you say, does go to zero as n goes to infinity. So that is L1 convergent, okay? And both of them are, you can do the computation for the other one. And in fact, it's the same, right? It's again, because for the integral, it doesn't matter what the value is at zero. That doesn't affect the integral, right? We can change it at one point and the integral stays the same. Okay, any questions about that? So that's an example. It's a good one to have in the back of your mind when you, you know, it's one of our classes of examples to throw against planes. Okay. Okay, let's see. Maybe I'll do one more example that does not converge in L1, just so you get a feel for that, and then go to examples that we know do converge uniformly and therefore in L1. So let's see. So one more example. And I claim this one is not L1 convergent. Let me call it a new name, H sub n of x. Okay, and then I'm gonna ask the same three things. So pointwise uniform in L1, but this time I'm gonna take a function which is, instead of just going up to one, it's gonna go way up to n, okay? So it's gonna be tall, but it's still gonna be thin, okay? So, but this time I'm gonna put it between, 1 over n and 2 over n. Okay, so when x is divided between 1 over n and 2 over n, and otherwise it's going to be 0. So let me try to graph this to get a picture. So I have my function that starts at 1 over n and goes over to 2 over n, and it's 0 outside of here. But then at these points, it's very tall. It has height n. Okay, so that's my picture. Okay, for my function. All right, so let's look at, again, these three types of convergence. And let's see, so does this converge pointwise?
For pointwise, it would be yes.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's the same to the zero function again, right? Because once again, that tall thing, it's just going to sweep past, and you're never going to see it again, right? So once you head to whatever point you're at. Okay. It's getting taller, though, and that doesn't matter much to the pointwise convergence, but it does affect the L1 convergence. And so uniform, I claim, is not uniform for exactly the same reasons before. So once again, if we compute the uniform norm of the difference here, let me just compute it, I guess. So the uniform norm of HN minus 0, this time it's not 1, it's N, right? It's the maximum value that I see, which is N. Okay? And that does not go to 0. Okay, what about the L1 norm? What is the L1? Is this L1 convergent to 0? Not uniformly convergent.
Since we always have a rectangle in the integral that of height N and width 1 over N, we'll always have like an area of 1, which would mean it's not L1 convergent.
That's exactly right, and that's exactly the right conclusion. It's not L1 convergent for exactly the reason that you just explained. So if we take the HN minus 0 and compute its L1 norm, it is, as you say, the integral of HN, right here. And since there's just that one rectangle, that's 1 over N times N this time equals 1, and this does not go to 0. So this is also not L1. Okay, so notice, of course, we proved over here that if it were uniformly convergent, it would have to be L1 convergent. So the fact that it's not L1 convergent, we wouldn't have expected to see it to be uniform convergent and not L1 convergent. That's not possible. So, so we have to, once it's not L1 convergent, it's also not uniform. Got it. But in any case, that's a good example to keep in mind of something which is not L1 convergent. Okay, any questions about those examples? All right, so let's get some more examples of things that are L1 convergent and that we can use to give some integrals. All right, so this is example, I guess it's a 12.19 in the text. Okay. And it says that one of the classes of functions that we knew that they converge uniformly are power series. So you can use the power series. So if we have a power series, which let's just take one centered around 0. Obviously, it works other places. But let's take S being the sum, n equals 0 to infinity, a n, and I'm just going to center it at 0. So x to the n, like so. So it's a power series centered at 0 with radius of convergence r. And I'm interested in something inside of there, so I get uniform convergence. So we have A and B are less than R. Then we have uniform convergence. So SNX converges uniformly in the interval from A to B closed. So, of course, it converges in L1, because that's what we just finished proving. In the same interval from A to B. Okay, and so then we can use our fact about L1 convergence. So we get the integral of from A to B of S of x dx. We can instead compute the limit of the integrals instead of the integral of the limit. Okay, and that will simplify our lives because we know how to integrate powers. So then this is equal to the sum of the integrals 0 to infinity of a n integral of x to the n from a to b dx. Right, so that's making use of the theorem that we had above, that the limit of the integrals is the integral of the limit. Okay, and so then this we can just compute. Let's just do that. So this is then the sum n equals 0 to infinity a n, and I guess that's x to the n plus 1. divided by n plus 1, evaluated from a to b. Okay, just doing the integral. And then this is, and let me just re-index so that I have a power of x to the n again, which is handy. I don't know, it's a nice way to write it. You can write it either way, but let me do have both available. So if I re-index and make this x to the n, then I have to replace n plus 1 by n. Okay, so then I get a n minus 1, I guess it is. And this now runs from n equals 1, is the first term, to infinity, and we're evaluating from a to b. So it's just two ways to write it out. So it's re-indexed. Okay, and okay, so that's handy. And let's just do a quick example of that. I guess this is the next example in the text. It's very natural to put it next. And it says that you can now use the definition that we had of a natural log, which was as a integral, and the power series that we know, and combine them and get formulas. So for example, let's just try one, natural log of 2. We can write a formula for, it's going to be the sum of 1 over n times 2 to the n. And this is from the second indexing type, so it goes from n equals 1 to infinity. Okay. And you know, you can just write it out. So it's 1 half, plus an 8, et cetera. And it converges quite rapidly. 1/24. Okay. And it's a fast, rapid, quickly converging. Okay, let's see, how do we get that out of this formula? Okay, so let me just recall that we had a definition of the natural log. So natural log of x was defined to be the integral from 1 to x of dt over t. Okay, and we also had a power series. And so let's try to use that power series. So take, let's say, y equals 1 minus t, I think that's probably the, I'm sorry, 1 minus x. Sorry, I'm going to see, which is exactly the same thing, but I'm going to move it to the other side and take x equals 1 minus y. Okay, and just substitute that in. So I have natural log of 1 minus y is equal to integral from 1 to 1 minus y, just substitute it in. All right, and let's see. Now what I would like is the power series that we know that was really nice was 1 over 1 minus t, all right? So let's try to get that. So I'm gonna take t equals 1 minus s, so that I end up with over 1 minus s, and that's something that I can write a nice power series for, okay? And let's see, so that means dt equals minus ds, so I have a minus ds up here. And integral, and let's see, so when t is equal to 1, s is equal to 0, and when t is equal to 1 minus y, s is equal to y, and that's sort of why we write it that way. Okay, so those are my c substitutions there. Okay. All right, and let's see, we're getting closer now. So now this we can write as a power series. So this is equal to the integral from 0 to y and of minus. And now it's a power series. So this is going to be the sum. N equals 0 to infinity of 1 over, s to the n, like so. And that's the power series that I'm plugging in for the 1 over 1 minus s. And so then I still have my ds there. That's the power series that we learned earlier. Okay, and so then we can just do our integral just like we did above here. So it's going to be the same formula that I had here. So then this is then equal to, let me bring my minus sign out. And then I have the sum. N equals, and let me use this second formula here. So this is n equals 1 to infinity. And the a's were all ones, so that's still a one. And now I'm just left with this x to the n over n. Okay, so this is x. And I guess I'm putting in a y. So this is a y to the n over n minus zero to the n over n. Because those are my two values, y and zero. Okay, and obviously the zero goes away, and we're just left with this y. And so now, if I'm trying to get natural log of two, I'm almost there. So let me try that. So I'm going to take y equals a half, and we get minus the natural log of one minus a half. So that's the natural log of one over one minus a half, which is two, which is the natural log of two. Okay, and then we just plug that into our right-hand side. So this is then gonna be equal to, let's see, I brought my negative sign over to the other side, so that's gone. So I'm just left with this term here. This one goes to zero, so I'm just left with this part here, and then I get the formula that I wanted. So this is equal to the sum, n equals one to infinity, of 1 over n 2 to the n, which is the formula that I started with. Okay, so any questions about how to use this for power series? Okay. Then let me do one more example. So if you recall, the one of the more interesting functions that we built previously when we were looking at derivatives was the Weierstrass function, which was a function that was very jagged. It was not differentiable anywhere, but we nevertheless had ways to get our control over it because we wrote it as a limit. And once again, that limit was uniformly convergent. And so we can also compute integrals using the fact that it's uniformly convergent. So let me just do that example. So this is the example, and let's see, I guess it was 9.24. The Weierstrass function. Okay, and let's just try to integrate it. So let me compute the integral. And I'm going to go from zero up to, this is just because this is a particularly nice number to go to. So I'm going to go to pi over 3 of the Weierstrass function. Remember, the Weierstrass function was the sum, n equals 0 to infinity, of 2 to the minus n, and then a cosine of 3 to the n x. And this, as you may recall, was a function which is hard to graph, but because it was so jagged, but it was very jagged and differentiable nowhere but continuous. And this was uniformly convergent. So let me just recall, so this is uniformly convergent. Oh, and I dropped my dx, right? So this is uniformly convergent to a continuous but non-differentiable function. Okay, so we had trouble even computing point values of points there. We could do a few, but most of them are hard. But we can compute this particular integral. So let's do it. So this is then equal to, well, since it's a uniformly convergent sequence, it's also L1 convergent. So this is uniform, hence L1. Convergent. So we get this equality. We can switch the order of the sum and the integral. So this is going to be the sum, n equals 0 to infinity of 2 to the minus n, it's linear, so I can pull the 2 out. And then the integral from 0 to pi over 3 of the cosine of 3 to the n x dx. And that's an integral we know how to do. So this is the sum, n equals 0 to infinity of 2 to the minus n. Let's see, this will be a sine. And there'll be a 3 to the minus n sine of 3 to the n x evaluated from 0 to pi over 3. Right, and let's see, at zero, the sine is zero. At all multiples of pi, sine is zero. So most of those terms are zero. The only term that's going to contribute is n equals zero. So this is going to be equal to, 2 to the zero times 3 to the zero. So those are both going to give us just zeros. And then we have the sine of pi over 3 minus the sine of zero, which is also zero, plus the higher order term. So those are going to be the sum n equals 1 to infinity. But for every one of those, I'm going to get zero because the sine is going to give me zero. So all the higher terms are zero. So then this one, let's see, so this is a one, this is a one, this is a zero, and I'm just left with the sine of pi over three. Okay, so that's an integral that we can do explicitly. Once again, that's one of the facts that we can identify about this function. Okay, let me see, I will stop there. And next time we will add some new functions that we can integrate even though they're unbounded.